Tony Meola joins us on Sports Byline. We've been talking about his career and, of course, a member of the U.S. national team. You made your debut on the U.S. national team on June 10th, 1988. That was against Ecuador. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts going into that game and also the game itself.
Well, it was certainly an exciting time for me. Anytime, I would imagine, for every player that has their first international cap with the national team, I was excited. Didn't have cell phones and all this, you know, social media that we had now to try and get to my parents. We were in, I believe we were in Phoenix at that point for that game. It was a 4-team tournament that the U.S. Would play in every couple of months in order to prepare for World Cup qualifiers. I got the call that it was going to be me. I was excited, couldn't wait to play. Second half of the game, I take a guy down for a penalty kick. We lose 1-0 on that penalty kick, and I get on the plane the next day, and I can pretty much remember the headline. Meola foul, blows it for U.S. You know, I thought, well, I suppose it can't get any worse than this, you know, for me. But it was certainly exciting. It was the start of what ended up being 100 caps in my international career, and which spanned over, I think, just about 20 years with the full national team from start to finish in my career. And really some exciting times, not only personally, but I think the most gratifying thing is having been involved in so many games that were so important to U.S. soccer and the history of our game.
You know, one of the things that I don't think a lot of people have an appreciation for, Tony, is that, in essence, you're the last line of defense in a soccer match. And it's a pretty lonely position. I mean, it's vulnerable. People can see if a mistake is made, the ball goes into the goal. What type of mental attitude does it take to be a goalie?
Well, we spoke about Bruce Arena earlier. And the one thing he taught me in college was you have to have no conscience. And, you know, if you make a mistake, that can't turn into a second and a third mistake. That mistake's got to be done. And, he always used to tell players, but me in general, because Bruce was also a goalkeeper, and then I learned this from all the other goalkeepers, goalkeeping coaches that I had along the way, is that, you're not necessarily internally in an organization, you're not necessarily judged on the mistake that you make, whereas fans might just judge you on one bad play. What you're judged on is how you recover from that. You know, can you make a difference? Okay, you made a mistake in the fifth minute of the game, but you got 85 minutes now to make a difference. Can you make a difference? And a positive difference. If you continue to go in sort of a negative direction, that in our position is what you don't want. So when I look at sports, I look at, a quarterback in football, and if he throws an interception, how does he come back from that, right? Is he gun-shy from there? Is he not? I look at a pitcher when he gives up a home run and doesn't hit a spot in the baseball game and makes a bad pitch. Can he pitch the next three innings and get guys out with the same pitch he was trying to throw? You know, so I look at those things from a competitive standpoint. I have these discussions now with my oldest son, and we talk about all those things. But you have to have the mentality where you what just happened, you can't do anything about it anymore, but you can do something about what's going to happen.
Hall of Fame closer Dennis Eckersley is a friend of mine. He and I were talking about it, and I think you'll agree with this, Tony. He said the greatest asset that a closer can have is a short memory.
Yeah, or none at all.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. No, that's exactly the theory. And, Dennis Eckersley is a guy that I watched growing up, and now I watch Mariano Rivera, obviously, and the guy who's made very few mistakes along the way. But it seemed like, especially now that he's coming to the end of his career, it seems like the last couple of years, every time he'd give up a base winning hit in the bottom of the ninth or top of the ninth, everyone wanted to talk about, is this the end of Mariano Rivera? And now, you look 3 months down the road, now he's put together 20 saves in a row, and they're like, well, that's the old Mariano again. So it's how you recover, and I think that's how, that's why guys, the good ones are separated from the great ones.
Let me also ask you about World Cup play. I have my friends who play professional golf that tell me that you can go out and play a PGA event week after week after week, but there is something totally different about playing in one of the majors. And I think that applies probably to a World Cup match as well. Give me some insight as to the dynamics of a World Cup soccer match as compared to just another soccer match.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty good analogy. Obviously, I've never played at that level of golf, but I can imagine what they're going through. So when you play an MLS game, obviously the intensity is there. When you play league games in Europe, the intensity is there. But when that particular day in a World Cup is do or die, you don't get that all the time. See, in a league, you've got a span of, 30 or 40 games. When you make a mistake in week 10, you've still got an awful long time to recover and make up for that mistake and make up for those points you may have lost along the way. And the intensity level, I'd like to tell you that it's doubled, but I mean, it's exponential on how much the intensity level is, goes up during a World Cup qualifier. I read the comments from players today, and, they just went through a series of two friendlies and three World Cup qualifiers, and all they talked about as well, that the friendlies got us ready physically and mentally, and as a group brought us together and gave us some ideas of how we can compete, but nothing like when we step on the field for a qualifier. And then when you get to a World Cup, it's magnified even more because now the entire world is watching. I remember the Brazil game, and I saw a staggering report that one out of every three people in the world watched our game in 1994. When we played Brazil on July 4th. And when you think about it in those numbers, I mean, that doesn't happen very often. So you can imagine the intensity and knowing that that's a knockout game and all that stuff is, just adds to the excitement of the game.
Having seen the great teams, the teams that won World Cup play, what is it that they consistently all do?
Well, I think what they continue to do is put their young players in the greatest leagues in the world and in the greatest position in the world. I think we're at a dilemma here in the United States because our league is growing so fast. We're able to develop young players. We lose some. We to European leagues. We keep some. And I think that the struggle for these young guys, should I stay or should I go overseas? Should I stay here? We saw for years they were starting to go overseas. Now we're seeing that guys are deciding to stay here because they're seeing the level of competition, the foreigners that are coming into the league. So we're kind of at a little bit of a crossroads, which is a good decision for these young guys to have to make. So we have this sort of give and take with do we let the young stars go and flourish? Do we pay them more money to stay here? I think it's all positive stuff. When players have decisions like that, it excites me because it shows the growth of the sport. But I think that's what they do for the most part. They've been doing it year after year after year, and we're starting to see that now in the U.S.
Is there a particular memory that you have of any one moment during the course of your career that is kind of ingrained? Because, I mean, you had lots of moments, but I have always found that athletes go back to one particular one that is kind of etched in their minds.
I think that it would have to be us qualifying for the first World Cup in that game in Trinidad, December 3rd, 1989, going to Trinidad. Trinidad only needed a tie in the game. We had to win the game. We hadn't been in the World Cup for 40 years. We had a bunch of guys predominantly in college and guys working, working odd jobs in order to continue to train. There were very few guys that were playing professionally, and somehow we went down to Trinidad and met Sia Red, and Paul Caligiuri got that historic goal for us, and we were able to qualify for our first World Cup, and I think that was really the springboard to show young kids around the country that, we can compete at this level and we can get to a World Cup. So you can now start dreaming about getting to a World Cup.
In about 45 seconds, was it hard because of the passion that you had for the game, the passion that your dad passed on to you for the game, to walk off the field and move on to the next stage in your life?
Yeah, the hardest part is the locker room, missing the locker room. But, you know, now that I covered the game on the radio, I get to travel around, I'm still in contact. And quite honestly, I'm getting just as much a thrill now that I'm able to coach my kids and coach them through sports and teach them the passion of the game. I don't think of it in those terms like I'm missing out on anything. I love that the game's growing. I love that it's getting to the point that it is, and I hope it continues to grow.
Tony, I want to thank you very much. I always enjoyed watching you in goal because I played this sport. I have a love for it as you do as well. Never played it at the level that you did, but I really loved watching you. And thank you for talking about your career and your life as well. You represented the United States very, very well in World Cup play and in the MLS. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Ryan. That's awfully nice. I appreciate it.
Tony Meola with us again, a member of the National Soccer Hall of Fame and also was the goalkeeper for the United States in the 90 and 94 World Cups. We continue on Sports Byline.